Corsican Brothers, from the novel by Alexandre Dumas, adapted for radio by Eric Scott, and a George Edwards production. Louis Prevost has been told the amazing story of his birth, and he decides that he must go to Corsica. However, he does not realize that there are tragic happenings on the island where he was born. Griffo, the old family retainer, rides at breakneck speed to the De Franchi house and informs Madame Stair. Madame, her face expressionless, as her eyes reflecting the agony which she is enduring, tells Griffo to continue.
Oh, Madame.
Tell me quickly, Griffin. How did it happen?
It all happened so quickly, so suddenly. You see, Madame, we were asleep. They came upon us in the dead of night. We were hunting, as you know, and we camped in the valley below Mount Cyanthus. Lucien and I had shot pheasant early in the afternoon, and we'd baked one of those birds over the campfire and then gone to our beds to sleep.
He is dead.
I will tell you the story, Madame. We slept early because we were to rise at 5. Lucien inside the tent and myself outside. For as you know, Madame, I've always slept where I could see the stars. And we were very tired, Madame, and that is why we slept so heavily. But in the middle of the night, we suddenly heard a shot.
A shot?
Aye, Madame, it seemed to come from far off, and we both awakened at the same instant. That was a shot, I cried to Lucien, and I reached for my gun straight away. But in the next moment, I heard a cry from inside the tent. And in the flickering firelight, I saw two figures struggling. And before I could reach my gun or a knife, down came the right hand of his assassin.
Oh.
Lucien cried out. He cried out not in pain, Madame. It was a cry for me to flee, to come to you, to protect you, because he could do no more. And then before I knew where I was, Madame, I was struggling with a second assassin.
Negadici.
I know who one of them was, Madame. It was dark. But the one who was struggling with me, I heard him call, Dino, are you all right?
Dino, Marianne's father, the head of the house.
And then Dino answered, Madame, and said, I have killed the boy. Where are you? Where are you?
Killed him. Killed him.
And then the other one came out of the tent, and because there were two to deal with, Madame, because I knew I would have no chance and that Lucien would have been struck down, I ran to my horse. I mounted and ridden bareback all the way to you.
Oh, Griffo.
Oh, Madame. What can I say? I have failed you, haven't I? But Lucien's last words were that I should come to you.
I knew this would happen, Griffo. Sooner or later, I knew the Gedici would take my son. Is it any wonder that I want to protect the other?
The other? Madame, what do you mean?
Nothing. Nothing.
What can I do, Madame?
Leave me, please. Leave me alone. I will send for you later. As it is, you look as though you need sleep, rest, some food.
No, I am too sick at heart to eat, Madame. I am so ashamed of myself. So ashamed, Madame.
So, another goes to the Gedici. My own son, flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood. Now there is only myself left. Myself and Louis. Louis, he must not come here. They will kill him as they have killed Lucia. They will kill Louis and then me. Finally, there will be no one of us left. The Gedici will have won out after so many years. They will have won. Oh, Lucia. Lucia.
Walking slowly up the stairs, Madame went to her room, knelt down before a bronze icon hanging by the bedside, and there she prayed for 2 hours. Then, as though in a trance, she moved to the windows and gazed out across the mountains to the broken silhouettes of the snow-capped peaks in the distance. Beyond those peaks in a valley shut off from the sea, her son's body must lie at this moment,
victim in a cruel vendetta which she had known ever since she had married into the de Franchi family. We leave Madame in her twilight mood of grief and travel the Mediterranean Sea once again to a rose-colored boudoir in the house of the Latouches. Here is joyousness and gaiety as Emilie prattles excitedly about her forthcoming marriage to Louis Prevost. Her Aunt Cecilia tries to curb this chatter, but she herself is also interested in spite of her severe demeanor.
We shall have a light town couch with two gray houses, and the postillions will be liveried in black and silver.
Emilie, your tongue runs away with you.
And so will Monsieur Prevost's purse run away with me, too. I shall demand the largest string of pearls in Paris as a wedding present.
And you think you will get them?
Why not? I have made, ever so many inquiries about Louis. His uncle and aunt are fabulously wealthy. And from what he tells me, we shall be installed in the country residence. The loveliest chateau in the whole of France, with a huge lake in front, and swans and deer in the park. I shall improve on the terrace. There will be peacocks. They are picturesque. And myself, in a long green gown, with black parasol, with saffron trimmings.
In spite of your prattle, young lady, you're very lucky. I've had it from several that many young women have chased Louis Prevost, but not one could demand his attention.
I did not chase him. I don't chase anyone.
You don't have to, my child. Gifted as you are with such fair hair and such provocative blue eyes. But have a care.
Have a care?
Oh, you're very willful. You're not without guile. And although the people who think they're clever perhaps gain it in a temporary way, sometimes there is retribution.
There will be no retribution for me. So long as I have my pearls and my ermine and my coach and a place in court, I don't care.
Such confidence.
Well, my father knows only the best people in Paris. His great handicap was lack of money. I shall have the advantage of being my father's daughter, and I shall also have money. Aunt Cecilie, why did you never marry?
Because I was in love, child.
In love? All the more reason why you should marry.
The man I happened to love was already a married man. You can count yourself lucky that you love one who is not married, one who is eligible, and one who is thoroughly worthy to be your husband. Perhaps too worthy.
I think the balance is equal. If you could have heard Annette last night when I told her, the jealousy in her eyes, the envy.
Don't gloat about it, my dear. Annette cannot help her look.
She will never get a husband. Of that I am perfectly sure. Oh, what a tears to be fat.
She's a very sweet girl.
Sweet like a big, fat, sugary pig.
Emilie, don't talk like that.
Like a big, fat, sugary pig. Bulges and all.
That's my story, Uncle. Monsieur Godet will bear me out.
I am amazed, Louis. Amazed. I still can't believe that...
That Louis has a family in Corsica. Come with me, Monsieur Prevost, and you'd be certain. I met Lucien de Franchi. To talk with him is an uncanny experience. Why, look, even now as Louis frowns, there are the same wrinkles, the same creases over his forehead.
When Tepita came to work in our household, she never mentioned Corsica.
Well, that was because she'd been paid to keep quiet. Madame de Franchi made her swear that she'd never tell a living soul where the boy came from.
All because Madame wanted this son to live. A small comfort for her when she would never have an opportunity of seeing him.
She will have now, Monsieur. I feel it my duty to go to my mother.
And supposing we disapprove of this, Louis?
But you wouldn't, surely, Uncle. After all, Madame de Franchi is my mother. I have a brother as well. There are 29 murderous cutthroats ready to fall upon them. They may need me.
Need you? But what help would you be? Your aunt has always had a horror of warfare and the fight. That's why you were never taught defense, why you were never taught to use a pistol. And at Corsica, my son, to enter Corsica as a de Franchi, unable to defend yourself, well, this would be sheer madness.
And it's time enough for me to learn.
Does it mean nothing that we have brought you up as our own child?
You've been very kind, Uncle. You've treated me so well. But you must remember, too, that it was necessary for you to have someone to carry on after you. There were no children by your own marriage, and no one else to carry on after you and my aunt had gone.
Your aunt would never allow it. And I am of the same opinion. It would be sheer ungratefulness if you left us away.
But I may come back.
Perhaps I might even bring my mother back with me.
What? Bring a peasant woman and her son to this house?
A peasant woman, Uncle? What talk is this?
I want you to understand, Louis, that you've been brought up amongst gentlemen and ladies, amongst noblemen and people of the court. To ask such people to meet a woman such as Monsieur Godet has described, a woman who lives in the mountains like a peasant?
Stop it, Uncle. Don't say these things. You're talking of my own mother.
A woman whom you don't even know.
That may be. But her blood is mine, and mine hers. And I must go to her.
Then if you must, you must. But listen carefully to what I have to say, Louis. You're love Julius. It's the one thing I despise more than anything else in this world is ungratefulness. If you go to Corsica and take up with your own family, you sever with us.
What?
What is more, in spite of the fact that you told me that you intend to marry a certain young lady in this city, I might tell you that you will be obliged to inform her family that there will be no prospects. Leave us and go to Corsica, and you are disinherited.
Louis looked aghast at his uncle. A tremendous decision must be reached. He has to consider not only the people who have adopted him, but the girl with whom he is in love, Emilie Latouche, and his family who need his help, perhaps, in Corsica. There is an unexpected development in the next chapter of The Corsican Brothers.